Today we'll discuss the status of girls in India. Our guest filmmaker Naina Pais Kaputi argues that Indian women and girls are endangered. They continue to lose their lives to infanticides, sex-selective abortions, dowry deaths, and brutal gang rapes. At the same time, Indian women are accomplished scientists, doctors, astronomers, and parliamentarians. So what's happening in Indian society, and what can be done to achieve a balance for girls and women? We'll talk about the film Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls, after the news. Welcome, I'm Hannah Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 3 years ago, the brutal gang rape of a 23-year-old medical student in New Delhi, India, sparked widespread protest in that country and internationally. On December 16, 2012, Jyoti Singh Pandey was beaten and gang raped by six men in a private bus in which she was traveling with a male friend. The men damaged her internal organs with an iron rod. She died 2 weeks later in a hospital from her injuries. The case garnered global media coverage and focused attention on the issue of sexual violence against women in Indian society. The new film, Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls, explores the cultural origins of gender violence against women in India, a patriarchal mindset, a preference for sons, and a deep-seated intolerance has led to the murder of 50 million Indian girls and women in the last century. Filmmaker Naina Pais Kaputi argues that Indian women and girls are endangered. She says they continue to lose their lives to infanticide, sex-selective abortions, dowry deaths, and brutal gang rapes. And in the film, she asks, India's economy was booming, modernization was everywhere, access to education was increasing, so why was this genocide still happening, and were other Indians here in the U.S. aware of this? So on today's show, we'll talk about what's causing a rise in sexual violence against women in India and what are some of the solutions and initiatives to deal with it. Naina Kaputi was born in India and moved to the U.S. in 2002, studied at the New York Film Academy. She's worked on several award-winning films, including Desi Confused by America, shot in New York City, and Gentle Lovers, shot here in San Francisco. She also founded Global Walk for India's Missing Girls in 2010 in San Francisco, and that's an international awareness campaign on the genocide of Indian women. And Naina joins us today. Hi, Naina.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for being with us. The film Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls, will be screening at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco this Saturday, June 13th, and next Thursday, June 18th, as part of the SF Doc Fest. We'll be talking to Naina all hour today, but we also want to include you in the conversation. How has gender discrimination or violence affected you or your community? What does gender violence look like in your community? If you're an organizer or an activist, we want to hear from you, especially those within the Indian American community or outside of it, working to stop gender violence. What works and what has worked? Give us a call at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can post a web comment at yourcallradio.org. So, Naina, first, I want to play a clip. We talked earlier about the Delhi gang rape case that sparked widespread protests in India and abroad, really. So let's hear a little clip.
Sure.
Our top story, yet another incident which highlights just how unsafe the national capital is for women.
A crime occurred in the capital of India. A crime so cold-blooded and brutal that it made headlines across the globe. A 23-year-old medical student and her male friend were returning home after watching a movie at a theater in Delhi. They boarded a private bus where the young woman was gang-raped and brutally violated with an iron rod by the six men on the bus, including the driver. The incident was widely condemned both nationally and internationally. Subsequently, public protests against the government for failing to provide adequate security for women took place all over India. The clashes between the thousands of protesters and security forces were covered extensively by the mainstream media. This was the first time in my life that I had witnessed this kind of public outrage in response to a brutal act of violence against a woman.
Naina Kaputi in the film Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls. Naina is with us on the line. Naina, you said this is the first time in your life that you saw protests about violence against women in India. Why do you think this case sparked so much outrage?
I think there have been, you know, many cases of rape in India, but I, for some reason, because maybe she was a middle-class woman, she was educated, and I think the brutality of the rape, it wasn't just a sexual act, the violence associated with the act, you know. And another thing I also feel is, you know, when we were growing up as young girls, we were always told you'd be safe if you go out with a man. Like, don't go out after dark, but if you do, you know, have a male friend or a male relative accompany you. And here she was with a male friend, and, you know, she was doing what most of us do when we are, you know, when we're working in our late teens. You know, she was in her early 20s. She was going out to a movie, and I believe, I don't remember the name of the movie, but anyway, it was a popular Oscar-winning movie, and, you know, she was going to a theater in Delhi, and I've been to that theater. As I mentioned in the film, I've taken the route that young woman has taken, and, you know, so I think that's what woke people up, that she was just doing something very ordinary after a hard day at work, and, you know, she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I think because she was educated and she was dressed in Western clothes and she wasn't a young man, it kind of aggravated the men that raped her, because what I feel is people are beginning to feel more threatened by the educated, empowered woman, and this was their way of teaching her a lesson. And I just think the brutality shocked India, and it was like it had reached a point like, we can't take any more of this, we have to protest. And I was very proud of the way India reacted, and you know, and I was, you know, and I'm glad that it made national and international headlines. And yes, the rape laws, you know, they've made rape laws stricter, and people are now coming forward when there have been, you know, cases of sexual violence or assault. So maybe there has been a little bit of, you know, maybe there has been some positive change, but there's a lot more to be done.
Right. And you were talking about, you know, maybe people are threatened by the educated kind of Western dressed woman. The New York Times reported that one of the men on death row for the crime, Mukesh Singh, he told a British filmmaker that his victim invited the rape because she was out too late at night and that she would have lived if she had submitted to the assault. He said, a decent girl won't roam around at 9 o'clock at night. A girl is far more responsible for rape than a boy. Boys and girls are not equal. Housework and housekeeping is for girls, not roaming in discos and bars at night doing wrong things, wearing wrong clothes. And for some reason, he put a percentage. He said about 20% of girls are good.
Right.
And so how widespread is this idea of an educated, and, you know, you said educated and Western, like dressed in a kind of a Western style. Are those two, you know, always found together pretty much? Is that a sign of an educated Indian girl that she's in jeans and a T-shirt?
Not necessarily. I think I'd say more than Western dress. I think it's empowered. I think this woman had, and again, you know, Indian women are empowered. I mean, even women who are in the villages and are, you know, walking miles to bring water to, you know, to feed and take care of their family. Everyone's empowered. I have to say, rape happens across India. It just doesn't happen among the educated women. I mean, there have been a spate of rapes, which are, you know, many of them have taken place in the villages. But I do feel from, you know, the attitude of these men, you know, towards this woman, and the remarks by a lot of political leaders after this rape happened, right? They said that it was almost like she deserved to be raped because, as you said, she was out, you know, late, and what was she doing out late? She should have been at home, you know, any good Indian girl. So there is that attitude that good Indian girls stay at home, you know, they don't go roaming out at night. Now, there hasn't been enough research done to show that if you wear Western clothes and you're educated, that, you know, you are, the chances of you being raped are higher, because, you know, as I said, rapes happen across India. They happen across the world. I mean, and they happen across the economic strata, across age. So I would not be comfortable saying that, yes, because you're wearing Western clothes and you're educated, you know, you're, there's a bigger target on your back.
Because that's a very dangerous thing as well. So I want to play a clip from the film that explains why you wanted to make a film on this issue. It began when you and your husband traveled to India to adopt a baby girl. Let's hear the clip.
After moving to the U.S., my husband and I traveled to India to look into adopting a baby girl. At an orphanage we visited on the outskirts of Bangalore, the supervisor there told us that before this orphanage was built, people used to drown their baby girls in the nearby lake. This was still happening in many parts of the country, and the practice was actually on the rise. I was horrified and shocked to hear about this. I went home and did more research and found devastating statistics.
Story, yet another incident which highlights.
And that is a clip from the film Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls, which will be screening at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco this Saturday, June 13th, and next Thursday, June 18th, as part of the San Francisco Doc Fest. And we'd like to get your comments as well on this issue of the status of girls and women in India. Give us a call at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And we also want to hear, even if you're not in from the Indian American community, what has gender violence looked like in your community, and how is it being dealt with? Are things getting better, and what has worked to combat violence against girls and violence against women in your community? 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255, or give us send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Naina Kaputi is now magically with me here in studio. Hi.
Hi. Nice to finally be sitting in a room instead of on the road. So thanks, Hannah.
All right. Totally. Absolutely. Just to explain, she was on the road and now she's here with us gracing our studios. Thank you. We just heard the clip about you deciding to travel to India and adopt a baby girl. Tell me more about that, and why a baby girl?
So growing up in India, I was really lucky to be born into a family that wanted daughters. My father actually wanted four daughters. So I grew up feeling very special, you know. In fact, he managed to just have me and my brother. And in fact, my brother would say, I wish I was a girl because daddy loves you, you know, more than me when we were younger. You know, and then my mom was very involved in a lot of charities. I used to visit orphanages as a young girl and a young woman. And I used to see all these girls, not just in the orphanages, but on the streets. And I always felt that when I get married, I want to give one of these girls a home. And I did get married. And, you know, my husband's actually not Indian, he's American. But one of the conditions was that we're going to adopt a child because I want to, you know, this has been my dream since the time I was young. And so we visited this orphanage, and I was also looking at doing a documentary film on a social justice issue. I just wasn't sure what. Uh-huh. And so we went to this orphanage, and this, as I mentioned in the film, the supervisor told us before the orphanage was built, they used to drown baby girls in the nearby lake. And actually, there were no baby girls available because the number of parents wanting to adopt is way more than the number of girls available for adoption. So it's interesting because as 50 million girls have lost their lives in the last century.
Can you break that down? That's a huge number. And just if we can try to explain the basic reason why girls are not wanted, for example, either immediately after birth, they're mm-hmm. drowned, mm-hmm. or even, in the womb, they might be aborted because right. they're girls, not right. for any other reason. Can you explain people who do that, why they would do that?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, initially I thought people were doing it for economic reasons because, India is a patriarchal society, even though we've had a woman prime minister. We have women in very senior positions in the government, scientists, the woman that went to the moon, Kalpana Chawla.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we've had, and, we also worship women as goddesses, the goddess of wealth, the goddess of education. So it's interesting, but at the same time, there are so many cultural aspects that have been passed down through generations on where women have lost their value. One of them is India was an agricultural country. And when agriculture started getting more mechanized, women's roles initially women played very important roles because they were part of the labor. They used to work in the fields and mm-hmm. harvesting the crop. And then when it got more mechanized, they were relegated to the homes and mm-hmm. they had to, cook and clean. And then they lost their value. And then that's when dowry came into the picture, because when the woman got married, initially her father would give her some part of the crops or, maybe some of the livestock as a gift for her so mm-hmm. she can take that to her husband's house. But that slowly turned into, the husband demanding, you have to give me this if you want me to marry your daughter. So you can see that these two things tied into each other, and then dowry started playing a bigger role. So, I interviewed a lot of women, interviewed a lot of activists. I traveled across India, and no one was able to come up with just one reason on why girls are undervalued and why people want sons. I mean, these are two examples. Another is that in India, there's no social security. So when parents grow old, they very often, at least in the past, would stay with their sons. The sons would look after them. And so they wanted to make sure they have at least one son. Mm-hmm. For many years, property and business went from the father to the son, never to the daughter. So again, if they have only daughters, then the property would go to the daughter's family. So these were some of the reasons, but there was not one big reason. Yes, this is the reason why. It's just, as I said, all these things play a factor. And mm-hmm. actually, I've met many women who are now looking after their parents in their old age, I think there's a saying, right? A son is a son till he gets a wife. A daughter is a daughter all her life. So, and I've seen that
in
India.
And do you think more people are realizing that? And is there a shift now to realize that girls are as valuable as boys?
I think there are a lot of families in India and in the Indian diaspora that really value their daughters. But unfortunately, just looking at the declining sex ratios and especially the female population, just yesterday I read a news report where they said in an eastern state in India, in Odisha, in some villages, there's 1,000 boys to about 450 girls. I mean, look at that gender, the gap over there. So it's not, so obviously people are not changing their attitude. And now, on sex selection with the ultrasounds, people are able to see the gender of the baby. So that's
playing. Isn't there a law now against that?
There are a lot of laws in India. There's laws against dowry. There's laws against rape. There's laws against you finding out the gender of your baby. But, there's so much corruption and there's this desperation to have a son that greed is overpowering all this, and doctors are breaking the rules because there's money offered to them.
All right, we do have some callers on the line. If you'd like to join this conversation, give us a call at 866-798-8255. We're speaking with Naina Kaputi about the status of girls and women in India. Let's go to our first caller, Raj in San Francisco. Hi, welcome.
Yes, hello, Naina. Thank you for this wonderful program. And I've never said this before. And I'm an Indian man with four sisters, and I grew up in England. And you mentioned that more people are threatened by empowered Western-styled women. Guess what? My four sisters had Western-styled dresses, and they grew up in England. They were educated, and their biggest enemy was their mother, who wanted to sell them off or have arranged marriages as soon as they got to be 16 years old, because she was threatened by them. And I'm her only son, and I told her I didn't want an arranged marriage. I don't want anything to do with this culture. There's something dysfunctional about it. Okay, that's all I have to say. You can't imagine the pain that I feel every time I think of my four sisters, and I really applaud your efforts.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Raj. We really appreciate your call. Naina, he's in pain.
Right, and Raj, thank you for sharing, because it's I think it's very brave of you to talk about this on, you know, I think if more Indians come forward and share their stories, and, you know, one of the things I face from some people in the community is a certain amount of backlash, because they feel that, you know, I should be promoting only the successes of India. But, you know, like you, I've seen many people who are suffering because they've seen discrimination or violence against, you know, themselves or a woman in their family. And so I want to applaud you for, you know, sharing this with us, and hopefully this will make other, you know, again, it's not just the men, but the women who can also, you know, discriminate against other women. So I appreciate this, and hopefully your sisters are in a good place today and are empowering their daughters. So thank you.
Oh, yes. You know, and to that note about sometimes it's the women oppressing the women. Right. I mean, I know in Africa, it's the grandmothers who are perpetuating the genital mutilation
right.
of girls, for example.
Right, right.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Is it the patriarchal society? Is it the fathers and the grandfathers? Or is it also the mothers?
Unfortunately, I don't know so much about the mothers, because I you know, all the women I interviewed, very often they were really forced to either, you mm-hmm. know, abort their daughters or kill their daughters. You know, I think most of the women, at least when they're still mothers, want to do their best to protect their daughters. It seems to change when they become mothers-in-law and grandmothers. Oh. It's when they, you know, it seems like when they're in a position of power, some of them, you know, put so much pressure on their daughters-in-law to have a son, or if she has a daughter, they ill-treat their daughter-in-law and their granddaughter. And it's, you know, first of all, it's a man's sperm that determines the gender of the baby. And yet, you know, and this is an educated family. If you watch our whole film, you'll see some very educated women from wealthy families sharing the discrimination and violence they face because they had daughters. So,
And did you find it easy for these people to talk to you? Did they readily do it, or did you have to do some convincing?
Most of the women that came forward to talk did so on their own, because they wanted to share their stories. And they've, you know, one is I feel it's a healing process when you talk about, you know, what you've gone through. I think it helped them, but I think they also wanted other women to know that they were not alone. And I applaud these women, because it's not easy to come and share your personal stories in a documentary film that is going to be seen widely. But most of the women that did it because they said, I want the world to know. One Indian woman said, I want the world to know the kind of violence that I have faced and my sisters have faced and my daughters are going to face. And she was really brave. In fact, she's not, that portion of her interview is not in the film, but she's pleading to the camera and saying, people, please do something about this. We Indian girls and women are suffering, and I need your help. And then the women I spoke about, one woman is a doctor, and she has twin daughters. And, you know, when she was pregnant with her twin daughters, her husband and parents-in-law were putting so much pressure on her to abort her twin daughters. So they threw her out of the house. When she refused to do so, she moved back into her parents' house. But she was the first woman. Her name is Dr. Mithu Khurana. She's in Delhi, India. She's the first woman to have gone to court and, you know, filed a case against her husband and in-laws and the doctor for doing, they did an illegal sex determination test when she was sick and found out she was having girls.
I want to talk about what empowers women to do that, but we're going to a break. I'm talking to Naina Kaputi, director of the film Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls, that is screening as part of the SF Doc Fest June 13th and June 18th. You can give us a call at 866-798-TALK. We'll be back right after a break.
You're listening to Your Call here on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Toll free. Let us know if you're you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you'd prefer to write to us, you can email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's BBC's World Have Your Say. We'll be talking about sexism in science, fertility, and a curfew in Indonesia being imposed on women. World Have Your Say coming up in a half an hour at 11 o'clock this morning here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco, KALW.org, your local public radio. Time is 10:30.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about gender violence in India. This is Your Call. I'm Hanat Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. And we want to hear from you, 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. Or email us what you think, any comments, suggestions, or questions for our guest at feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment at yourcallradio.org. With me in studio is Naina Kaputi. She is the film director for the documentary Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls. And we do have some of your calls as well. Try to get as many of them as we can. So let's go to our next caller. I believe it's Daya. Hi, Daya. Welcome.
Hi, it's Daya Mudra. Hi, Naina.
Hi, Daya. Nice to hear you.
I work with youth from the ex-untouchable community in India, and our girls are really the most vulnerable of all women in India. And I met Naina, I think, about 3 years ago at a benefit, and I've just watched her really persevere with this film. It was a very difficult film to get made. You know, people want to make action films, film about men, and I'm just so impressed and inspired. And also, I've been to so many, like, previews and screenings and benefits, and there's a huge community of people who just really love Naina and the film, and I just... I'm just very proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Daya. This film is bringing up a lot of emotions, Naina, and I'm wondering, was it hard for you to make it?
It was very hard for me. It took me 7 years to make the film. You know, when I started off 7 years ago, my focus was just on female infanticide after I visited the orphanage. And at that time, there was very little in the media. So... you know, I just thought I would be able to be done with the film in a year or two. I'd get a lot of funding. I said, yeah, you know, I'm here in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley. All these Indians are going to come forward and support me. I'm going to get grants from the different foundations. It's a women's issue. And no, I didn't. And, you know, there have been a lot of wonderful people as Daya. Daya is one of them. She's a founder of Jai Bhim. And just like Daya, there have been other women, Indians, non-Indians in mostly the Bay Area. And actually, a few years ago, an Indian gentleman came forward to support me. He grew up in Africa. He's an Indian Muslim, so he's an Indian man minority. And he has one daughter, and his daughter adopted a little girl from India. And he said all the women in his life have played such a huge role. His mother, his sister, his daughter, now his granddaughter. And he started funding my film, and he's now our executive producer. His name is Mr. Muhammad Hamir. And... thanks to him and other people, I've had a lot of support and been able to complete it. But yes, it was hard because, you know, when I traveled around and met all these women and heard their stories, it was really, really difficult. And, you know, I also have my own story in the film about how my father wanted 4 girls. And 2 years ago, while I was making the film, my father passed away. So for me, you know, that was really hard to have. I was in India shooting when my father passed away, so it was so hard for me. But I've dedicated the film to my father because I feel if the men, you know, support us and empower us along with our mothers, I think that could be one solution to ending gender violence, because they're also role models for their sons and our brothers, and they see their dads valuing women, their wives, their daughters, and then sons and brothers are going to do the same, right?
And so you said you expected a lot of support from the Indian community here, but you didn't get that. Why were some of the reasons, do you think? Was it a matter of, oh, she's airing our dirty laundry to the world? What kind of reactions did you get that were not helpful?
So as I said, I did get some support from, some of the Indians in the community who were amazing and went above and beyond to support me. So it wasn't like everyone.
Good.
And then there were also, some who were either indifferent, like I would reach out to them, for events, for fundraisers, and not hear back. Or there were a few, I remembered one event, an Indian gentleman came up to my table. I had a table, at this event, and he banged on the table and said, why are you doing a film about girls in India? You should do a film about China because they're killing girls there too. And I told him, yes, it's happening in China, but how many people know about India? And, I wouldn't spend 7 years of my life doing something if I didn't believe in it. I mean, I could be making tons of money. I'm a biotechnologist, I could be doing something totally different. But something happened to me when I visited, this orphanage, and when I heard about it and when I did research, and I just felt I had to be the voice. I'm very patriotic. I love India. There's so many beautiful, wonderful things about India. There's so many amazing people that love their daughters and love their sisters and love their mothers and love the
and
women.
And amazing women.
Women too, yeah. So it's not like, yes, I'm doing this film so that, it's going to affect tourism in India. But no, I believe in solutions. I believe media is very powerful, and I'm not doing this film to show how awful India is. But no, my reason is that there is hope and we can bring about a change. And as you mentioned initially, maybe people won't do anything about India. Maybe they'll focus on how gender violence is affecting, people in their country.
Somewhere
else. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right, right. Let's go to another caller. Let us go to Anastasia in Oakland. Hi, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me on, Naina. Thank you for this important conversation. I just wanted to make the point that I think some of the resistance from the Indian community, and I count myself as a second generation Indian American, is because when there is discussion about sexism in India, it's kind of turned into this idea of that there's something very specific about India that is culturally oppressive to women. And in that way, it kind of invisibilizes the fact that there is sexism and patriarchy all over the place, including in the United States. For example, I had been in India a couple of years ago when there was this gang rape, and there was so much protest in India, and I came back from India, and somebody said to me, oh, I'll never go to India. They treat women terribly there. And I was like, we just had a gang rape in the United States, like last year's Steubenville, that was just as publicized a gang rape. And there are gang rapes that happen all the time, and there are rapes that happen all the time. In fact, I don't know any female friend of mine that has not experienced some kind of rape or assault. All these things are coming out right now about women on campuses in the United States being raped, and campuses, very prestigious campuses, ignoring that and actually hiding those things. So I think that, there needs to be an understanding that patriarchy exists all over the world in different forms. In India, maybe there's more economic reasons for why women, people don't want to have daughters, such as the fact that dowry is still an issue. Families have to pay exorbitant amounts of, their money to give to marry off their daughters. And maybe the solution isn't maybe always just focusing on the gender, but the fact that there's, still a lot of poverty in India and inequality that has not been made better by the liberalization of their economy and the westernization of their economy, and some people react against that. I just think contextualizing the patriarchy and not understanding it as just an Indian phenomenon, but as a real thing that exists all over the world is really important. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the call, Anastasia. And I also want to move from kind of the babies, the child infanticide, to let's assume the girl was born and she grew up and she had a childhood and she grew up and it's time to get married. You also deal with the issue of domestic violence mm-hmm. against women
right.
in the film, and that is a major factor in this problem. Can you talk about that a little bit? And but also, what kind of solutions are you seeing that you're hopeful about?
Sure. And I just want to, before that, just address Anastasia,
mm-hmm.
because it's not, yes, I thought it was also happening, patriarchy and gender discrimination violence was happening among the, you know, among the less, the lower income community in India. But it was shocking for me that educated, wealthy people that could pay huge dowries for their daughters if they wanted to and throw these grand marriages, they were the ones who also only wanted sons or want, you know, or would, you know, pressure their daughters-in-law into aborting their daughters. So,
so how do you explain that then? Because the economic factor is not there.
Right. It's a, I feel it's a cultural mindset, and that's what, what's so interesting, that it's, you know, one activist shared with me how, you know, some of the women would, educated women would tell her, like, having a son is like a status symbol, like it's like having a Mercedes or something. You know, at a party they'll say, oh, you know, do you have children? And they say, oh, I have daughters. They say, oh, you poor thing, you only have daughters. But if you have a son, like, oh, cool, you have a son. And again, I'm not talking for every Indian person, but in, you know, but
right,
this is what's happening, and it's also happening among the Indian diaspora here.
And there are numbers. 2007 report from the United Nations State of the World's Children report. In the film, you have this number that it's astounding. 7,000 girls in India are eliminated, not every year, not every month, but every day.
Right.
And over 11 million abandoned babies in India, 90% of them are girls. That's according to the UN report covered by the Times of India in 2011. So, I mean, these numbers are huge. These numbers are big.
They're really big, yes.
So who else is talking about this? And what kind of solutions have been working?
So, you know, this is my opinion. There have been many laws in place. There are many wonderful organizations in India and organizations based in the U.S. that are helping girls and women in India, that are, you know, empowering girls, empowering women. Now there's a lot of focus on educating men so that, you know, having gender sensitization workshops so men start treating their wives as equal, you know. And there's also sensitization of the police. So they, because for very often the woman will go to the police, you know, with a, and again, I'm talking for about India because I'm an Indian woman and my focus of the film was about the violence against Indian women.
Right.
You know, yes, gender violence happens across the globe, but I did this film for a particular reason. And so definitely there are organizations that are aware of this and working really hard, you know, on different areas of gender violence and gender discrimination against girls and women. But I believe the solution really lies within each of us, because we all contribute to how girls are looked at, how girls are treated, how, you know. So if, you know, starting in our homes, if we have boys, you know, I have two sons and I'm trying from a very young age to teach them the value of girls, because it's interesting the things they pick up at school and the way they start talking about girls, you know, even though
here.
Right. It, as I said, it happens across the globe. This whole, you know, that's why you have date rapes and all these, you know, and you know, the U.S., yes, I'm not saying the U.S. is free from, you know, domestic violence cases in the U.S., I think, is the highest in the world. So I feel we need to start working with children in our homes, in our communities. I think we need to introduce gender equality studies in our middle and high school, curriculum, whether it's in India, whether it's in the U.S., whether it's in Africa, because until we can, you know, teach our kids, the girls, that, you know, first of all, we need to teach our girls that they're equal to boys. You know, we're made differently, but we still have equal value in society and we play important roles. And for boys to see girls as their equals, you know, not as objects, you know, because I think women are so objectified in the media as well, whether it's Bollywood or Hollywood or it's commercials, that they start seeing women as, you know, sexual objects, instead of just seeing them as, yes, this girl is my sister and my mom. I need to respect her.
Is all of that easier said than done?
It's easier said than done, but that's why I say it's the next generation and introducing it into the curriculum. It could be simple stories, you know, like I saw one little book, a storybook, where they're trying to introduce gender equality studies in a school in Mumbai, India, where, you know, in many homes, the girl has to stay home and, you know, help her mom in the kitchen after school, whereas the boy goes out to play. And in this study, they show how both kids are helping their mom finish cook dinner, and the dad's also involved, and then both kids go out to play together, or the girl's helping her brother with his homework, you know, the father's cooking or doing the house. So, you know, little things like that, and it's already happening. I see it happening in India, and they're introducing this, and I think it should happen across. I want my sons to, you know, learn about that. I'm not saying, you know, so so that's, I feel, one of the solutions. Because
that's positive. That's hopeful.
Yeah,
that's hopeful.
Absolutely.
Let's go to another caller. If you'd like to join the conversation, talk about what does gender discrimination look like in your community, and how is it being dealt with? Is it being talked about at all, or is it a taboo issue that's not talked about? And what has worked in your community when in regards to gender discrimination? Give us a call at 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255, or send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. So let's go to a caller. Let's go to Malij in Berkeley. Hi, welcome.
Hi. I had a few comments in regards to the relationship between men and women who are from the Indian diaspora. I was like Raj. I was raised, born and raised in England. I had two sisters. My mother was very hostile towards them when it came to the years of independence, and they were trying to blossom and grow. She almost, you know, in a way, spiritually almost tried to annihilate them, I would say. They have a very severed relationship with her because of that. I'd also want to say that if the suppression is good of information, you know, if you have that kind of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas attitude, then, you know, nothing has really happened. So I think suppression has been very, very effective as far as getting the stories out or suppressing the stories of women and what they're going through. My mother, conversely, she was a single parent at a very young age. I was 4 years old when my father passed away. She drove trucks. She ran stores. She lifted heavy boxes. She taught me reading and writing, only having 6 weeks of education coming to India. So I've never seen women as inferior. In fact, I've seen them as far, far stronger. And it's mystifying to me how women are objectified as these pieces of meat, or in very chauvinistic societies like America, maybe in India also. But, you know, we have to remember in America, with domestic violence, I think women die once every 7 minutes from domestic violence here in America. And we have a tendency in America to say, look at these countries over there and what's happening over there, because it helps relieve ourselves from looking at ourselves. We do that a lot in America. Also, I'd like to say I'm in the Navy, and we had a sailor last year die. She was shot and killed in Castro Valley through domestic violence, and I had spoken with my the people in my community and wanted to do a sponsored run or something where I could raise money for that. And I got next to no movement in regards to trying to make a difference.
Why do you think that is? Confident. Why do you think the reasons are? Like, you're trying to do this, you're trying to talk to people. When you don't get a response, why do you think that is?
I think it's the normal. It's the normal, right? Women are second-class citizens, but I don't care if you're talking about America or India. I feel the anger coming off them. I didn't feel it so much in England. I feel it massively in America. And they are, they are the second-class citizens. So if a woman gets shot, a woman gets raped, murdered, yeah, it's not good. But it's business as usual, and you know, and until it really I don't know, pulls at the heartstrings, you know, until when they say reality is when it happens to you, things aren't really going to change. And it is very much what Naina says, you know, like, if you need to see this female as someone's mother, someone's daughter, someone's, you know, wife, someone's auntie, you have to humanize it. And I don't know if this is a solution at all, but I just think there needs to be more actions, like Naina with her film. There needs to be actions.
Do you think men are willing to listen to what you just said and absorb it and get it and do it?
I think if you appeal to the warriorhood in men, the kind of mission-centric part of men, and say, this is something that needs to get done, you need to understand it, as a protector, as a provider, this needs to happen. I mean, I'm a very paternal person. A person, I hear this word patriarchal all the time, and it really, really offends and bugs me because I'm very paternal. I'm very protective. I'm very much about the man needs to be able to protect and provide and do what's right for his community, for his family, for everybody. So when I hear words like patriarchal, you know, I don't think of them as bad. When I think of matriarchal, I don't think of that as a bad word. Mm. But what's happened is, that part of the man's blueprint hasn't been accessed, where he needs to honor that part of the woman.
So that would
and
work.
Really do all he can and cherish her. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been accessed. It hasn't been seen as a tour of duty or something that actually makes you into a man.
Okay.
And this is the problem.
I really appreciate your call. Thanks for talking to us, Malij. And we have a number of callers on the line, so we'll just go to the next caller. Let's talk to Margaret in Salinas. Hi, Margaret. Welcome to your call.
Hi. I have a friend who family is from the Middle East, and last year they basically sold off her granddaughter to some guy to marry over in the Middle East. He keeps her for 6 months and sends her back. She's 14. She hasn't been allowed to be in school since she was 12 when they knew that they were going to sell her off. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Hmm. Thank you for that call. So we have a lot of that here in certain Middle Eastern communities. I know some people in the Yemeni community have their daughters here, send them back home to be married at a very young age. They don't end up going to college or studying.
Right.
So we're hearing these stories from all, you know, different parts.
Right.
Of our community. With me is Naina Kaputi. She is the director of the film Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls. It will be screened at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco Saturday, June 13th, and next Thursday, June 18th. And that's part of the SF Doc Fest. And we are talking about violence against girls in India, but also in these other places as our callers are bringing them up. Naina, what are you hopeful about after spending 7 years making this film, being immersed in these really sad and just sad stories?
Yes.
What are you hopeful about? And do you see that there's a direction toward, you know, in the right way?
Definitely. Because the film took me 7 years to make, I really built this community of Indians, non-Indians who came together. And, you know, I already see people coming forward to support organizations in India. Actually, a very powerful thing happened at my first screening at the SF Doc Fest on Saturday. So we had a world premiere on June 6th at the Balboa Theatre at SF Doc Fest. And I had 13 girls from India attend the screening. They're daughters of sex workers in India. And I was able to partner with the nonprofit that's working with them, which is called Kranti, which means revolution. And so the girls were in the U.S. on a tour doing a play on their lives growing up in the red light area. And they're now agents of social change. So I had these 13 girls and the staff present. And after the screening, we all went up on stage. And, you know, these girls, many of they were all crying, actually, because the film spoke to them, because it was, you know, so close to home, because many of their mothers have been trafficked. Some of them have been trafficked. You know, many of them have faced sexual abuse and all kinds of violence and discrimination. But, you know, they are my future. They are the girls who have been able to break away from the cycle of violence and, you know, are now being educated and are speaking. You know, they are the voices of the other girls in India. They're saying, you know, look, we were born in the worst circumstances. But, you know, thanks to this organization, we are able to be educated. We're getting therapy. And now they, in turn, want to help their mothers get out of the red light area and help other girls stuck in similar situations. So,
and are they finding support?
They to some extent in India, you know, but they're also finding support from the Indian community here. I know the Indian community really rallied, you know, behind this group. And
here in
yeah,
the US.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. That's how I met them, because another Indian woman put me in touch with them. And, you know, I'm sure in India too. See, I was more focused on what they were doing here, but I'm just saying, so there are organizations that are working hard, you know, tirelessly. And on my website, petalsinthedust.com, I have a list of nonprofits that were featured in the film. and that are, you know, agents of social change that are working on different aspects of empowering girls and women. And that's one of my goals, to highlight organizations that are making a difference. So when people see the film, and, you know, which is sad, but also ends with stories of hope, they feel compelled to do something. And one of the things they can do is, like, how you don't have to donate to the organization. Maybe you could just, you know, share the information on Facebook. Maybe you could volunteer with them. Maybe do write for them, you know.
And we'll put all of that information on our website as well, yourcallradio.org. Let's take another caller at 866-798-8255. Let's go to Jennifer, in Palo Alto. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I wanted to just address a little bit about the need for prevention in addressing this gender-based violence. And I think programs addressing boys and girls at a young age is very important. We do know that attitudes towards women get more negative as boys age, and attitude is an important part in terms of whether they commit violence against women as well as whether they intervene. And I just want to mention a program that we are just publishing on. It actually just came out today, called Your Moment of Truth program, which was addressing boys, high school boys. These boys were ages 15 to 19 in Nairobi, Kenya. And what we found is we had a six-week program that addressed several different things that some of your callers and your guests have talked about today, addressing character in terms of what kind of a man do you want to be. Do you want to witness violence and let it go, or do you want to intervene? And it also addressed gender stereotypes about women, as well as teaching these boys how to intervene when they witness violence, whether they intervene directly by saying something, get a larger group of people together to intervene, call the police, those sorts of things, that this intervention is on a continuum. And what we found in our program is that the boys who participated in the program 9 months later had better attitudes towards women and were much more likely to intervene when they witnessed such violence. And we had a huge difference. So the boys who participated in the program, of those who witnessed either verbal harassment, physically threatening behavior, or assaulting behaviors, about 75% of them intervened, as opposed to only about 30 to 35%.
Those are good numbers. Thank you so much for the call, Jennifer. That's some good news to
end on.
We have only a couple of seconds left. Naina, what is kind of your final message to people about your film?
So if you live in the Bay Area, please do come and see my film, because it's important, you know, to hear these women's stories, to hear their stories of tragedy, but also stories of hope. I will be at both screenings. There'll be a Q&A after both. If you're not able to make the film, please go to our website. I think, as I mentioned before, it's petalsinthedust.com. There's a very powerful trailer on the website. And then, you know, you can spread the message. But if you're on social media, tweet about Petals in the Dust, tweet about gender violence.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And again, we'll have all the information you heard at yourcallradio.org. Thank you, Naina Kaputi. I'm Hannah Baba. This has been Your Call. What is dissent? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with historian Ralph Young on the key role dissent has played in shaping the United States. The book Dissent, A History of an American Idea, chronicles a history of dissenters who went against the grain. It spans dissent from colonial times to the Occupy Wall Street and Tea Party movements in the 21st century. What's considered dissent and what isn't? It's Your Call with David Onick and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.